CliffCentral.com.
It's just, it's horrible. But I remember it was like Kanye and Kim on a bike, and they're riding through the Nevada desert, and you know, she's like climbing all over him while she's on the bike with him and facing him, and then she's turned away from him, but it's all very sexual. And but what a shit song. I forgot about it completely. Thank God. It poisoned me. What a horrible, horrible song. It's called Bound.
They made four good children with terrible names, and they made one terrible song.
What are the kids' names?
Those names. The names are so bad.
I always call them East, so North, bad. West, and South. But what are their real names?
There's North. Uh-huh. There's Psalm. There's Saint. And there's Chicago.
Ugh. Psalm and North is the two worst. P-S-A-L-M. Psalm, as in the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you do that? That is child abuse.
I think Saint is the worst. How do you call your child saints? That's quite highfalutin and egotistical.
It's all child abuse. Shocking.
Yeah, especially if you're doing it just for attention and you're already a celebrity and you've got attention. You don't need to do that to your kid. Why lump your kid with a stupid name? You know?
Well, Gareth, in terms of attention, it's very interesting. I was listening to somebody interviewing Miley Cyrus yesterday. And it's interesting what she was saying about she craves that dopamine rush.
Yeah.
It's like a drug.
Yeah.
Being in front of a huge audience. And then it got to the point where the audience wasn't enough for her, and she started to have to take real drugs.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. And then when the lockdown happened, she got all excited because she had a TV program, and that gave her a rush. But then the TV program wasn't enough, and then she started drinking. And it's that personality, and that's why so many famous people have died at the age of 27 or early in life.
Yeah,
because it's that artist seeking fame kind of personality.
It's a neediness. It's like they
neediness.
They can't do without it. You know,
most of us go through our lives and we.
We need attention. We need attention primarily when we're very little from our parents, right? And then somewhere around kind of your 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, you start to crave the acceptance and attention of your peers, people your same age. And eventually it becomes people in business who you respect. Then it becomes people who you look up to and so on. So there's always going to be – it's healthy for human beings to need and to crave attention at different stages of their lives from different people. But the desire, that the size of that craving – It can tear a hole into some people's hearts, you know.
It can be very unhealthy.
Yeah.
But having said that, but then there's a lot of very talented artists that don't have that, you know, that are normal. Like Paul McCartney is pretty normal.
Yeah, he is.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Look, it's just, it's a different thing for everybody. But I think if you have a huge need to get attention and love from complete strangers, that's not a good thing. That's probably going to hit you hard in life. It's probably going to do a lot of damage.
That's why I suffer from this condition myself, and I've kept it under control, or I've tried to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to tweet. I used to be on Twitter a hell of a lot more. Now I've calmed down. I'm not on Twitter as often. In fact, the last couple of days I haven't done any. I haven't even sent a tweet, which is quite an improvement.
Isn't it funny, though, how when you're not on there for a couple of weeks, it just appears and remember. You don't even think about it anymore. And the same goes...
No, I'm still looking at tweets at Twitter. I'm still reading stories. So for me, the fact that I haven't tweeted, that's quite something for me personally.
I'm so into podcasts. I've got to tell you that as a news source and as... a place to get really interesting information. It might not necessarily be news. In other words, it might not be current affairs stuff, because there are still better sources for current affairs than podcasts. But for interesting thinking, for hearing great interviews, there's just nothing that beats it. So I spend my time doing that. That's what I'm interested in.
So which is your favorite one?
There are so many, Damon. I listen to a bunch of them. Let's go to Duds. Hey, Duds, what's up, dude?
Hey, hi guys.
Yeah, what's happening, man?
I'm just I was just wanting to find out about going over to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed yesterday when I was listening to your podcast that you said that the you're not allowed to play music.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, you know, going over to YouTube with their censoring and all that, will it affect the show in other ways that you'll have to start watching what content you put out?
No, not really. I mean, we kind of know what we're about by this stage. Hey, you dressed for work? You already at the office?
I'm in the Kazakhstan. It is very cold.
He's actually in Kazakhstan.
-24 outside.
Yeah, Duds, don't worry about it, dude. We're not gonna let the platform we're on change the way we do the show. We're a pretty unique show worldwide. There isn't really a show that does a live show that is then podcast like we do every morning, and where we, you know, have different people coming in and all the rest of it. As far as I know, there isn't anything that's comparable to that anywhere in the world. There are lots of podcasts and there are lots of live shows, but there's very few that cross the kind of boundaries that we do. I don't think that's going to change, but, you know, you've listened for a while, so you know how the show's developed.
Yeah. I just hope it doesn't change too much. Like you often used to play like music clips in between what you're talking about, not necessarily at the break, and sound effects and things like that.
Yeah.
I guess also I started listening to Jim Jeffries. I don't know that. And you know, some of the things they say on that show, I guess are quite out there, and they don't seem to be getting censored
As far as I can tell, where YouTube demonetize and deplatform people is usually for very extreme politics, as I understand it, and occasionally because, you know, if we broadcast content that is considered harmful or dangerous or hateful, and this came up when we had Damon on last Friday, hate speech and all the rest of it, then you've got to be careful because you go into some dodgy territory there. But I don't think that's a big part of what we do anyway. You know, we have some controversial people on who sometimes have controversial opinions, but we're not like a crazy conspiracy theory channel. You know, like Alex Jones in America, who just basically spreads conspiracy theory propaganda. That guy's a raving lunatic. Now, as crazy as I am and Sia and a lot of our guests and, you know, people like Damon certainly are, I don't think we are spreading around disinformation as part of our jobs.
And obviously, once you've been live on YouTube, it'll have been recorded on YouTube as well, eh?
Mm. Yeah. So, we'll still be doing the podcast. That's the primary thing. So that's not going to change. This YouTube just gives.
But can you watch it on YouTube? Can you watch it on YouTube afterwards?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Video, and it'll be video.
Yeah. So you can see us instead of just listen to us. You know, that's the whole point.
Okay. Right.
And by the way, I mean, it's taken us this long to get to the YouTube stage because we've resisted. We kind of wanted to put the focus on podcasting, and it's become an extremely successful medium, and it's become a very popular medium in South Africa and all over the world. You know how it's grown over the last year and a half, exponentially. And that's terrific. So I think we put our bets in the right places, and now it's time to take it to YouTube. So, Duds, before you go, tell me about Kazakhstan, because all we know is like Borat. And, you know, what is the place like? I mean, what goes on there? What do you do? And where do you buy food? Yes. What kind of house do you live in?
I live in a yurt.
Yeah, exactly. Like one of those tents that Borat.
It's hard for me to answer that 100% because you know, I've only been working in a town called Atyrau for the last, you know, spanning over the last 10, 11 years. I started here in 2010. So I'm a helicopter aircraft maintenance engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I work on helicopters here. We fly for an oil company here, and I live in this town used to be a little fishing town many, many years ago until they discovered oil in the North Caspian Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then oil's just kind of become like an oil town now. Where I am, it's completely flat. Like we stay at the Marriott, which is probably the tallest building in the city. It's about 20, 22 stories high. If you stand on the top of the building, as far as you look at 360 degrees, it's completely flat. I think it. They say it used to be the bottom of a sea or an ocean, so it's completely flat, and nothing really grows too well here. It's very sandy and dusty. So, summertime it gets to like the upper 30s, lower 40s, and wintertime it goes the opposite way. So. Sure. It's just very cold at the moment. It's minus 24 with about 20-25 knot wind blowing. So outside it feels like about minus 35.
So just tell me what
it's not like. It's not like this all the time, but
it's just a bit of a cold spell. You described how flat it is, but are there trees? I mean, is it pretty? Do you have mountains in the background? Does it look good or is it just shit?
Not this town, but if you go to places like Almaty, they've got mountains and apparently you can go snowing and skiing. This town's a little bit more, I wouldn't say backward. It's just different to other parts of Kazakhstan. And because I haven't really been to those parts, I can't really compare it much. I've been to Almaty to the airport, and there it's a bit more picturesque. And there's hills and mountains and things like that.
Can you buy wives and can you buy slaves?
I guess you could. I haven't tried.
Can I ask Doug a helicopter question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so you're a helicopter engineer, mechanic guy. Yeah, so we had a helicopter crash about 2 weeks ago, and they came out with a report recently where all the people didn't survive in the helicopter crash. According to the report, the helicopter actually spun out of control in midair and started falling apart in midair. The rotor blades were flying all over the place, and then eventually it crashed and exploded. What would cause a helicopter in midair to start spinning out of control? Any theories?
Yeah, so the only thing that I know really when a helicopter starts spinning like that is they lose their tail rotor, and because the tail rotor is for anti-torque, the main rotor spins this way, and if there was no tail rotor, the helicopter would spin in the opposite direction.
But then how did the tail rotor disappear?
Well, sometimes you might find that due to mechanical failure, a blade will depart or break, or there will be a problem with the gearbox and there will be an imbalance and it throws the blades off. And then if you don't have forward flight, if you're in a stable hovering position and you lose your tail rotor, generally the helicopter will start to spin.
Now, could a large bird like a hardy-dar or an albatross have hit the tail rotor? I'm being serious. I know that sounds funny, but... Is that a possibility?
It is possible. There's so many different things that could go wrong. I mean,
what a tragedy.
Yeah, look, helicopters are fantastic things, but when they go wrong, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of force.
Yeah. Thank you, Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so you can maybe buy slaves and wives in Kazakhstan. What do you guys eat there? What sort of food do you people eat?
Us.
Yeah. Us.
Horse meat. No, you can get horse meat at the restaurants and stuff. Some of the guys that I work with actually like it. I don't fancy the idea of eating horse meat, but apparently it's better than steak.
Okay.
Know, beef steak.
You get
restaurants here. You get pizzas, burgers. You can eat the local sort of meals that they do serve here. A lot of Russian influence, obviously being an ex-Soviet satellite state.
So you get borscht.
You get your borscht and you get your plov, which is basically like a rice and meat dish. It's not too bad. I mean, there's a lot
people,
of expats here, so.
Are the people as ugly as in Borat's movies, where like the women have one eyebrow and the guys are all short and fat and you know, they've all got like one or two extremely inbred brothers or sisters? What's the story with people's have you met anyone? Can you go out in a town like you live in and meet people? I mean, what's the story?
You can, yes, you can. So here when I started here, we were warned that the locals, especially the males, they can be quite aggressive towards the expats because the expats come on and start chatting up the local females, and fights ensue. So there's that whole thing where they don't.
Oh, there's also a shortage.
Aren't really that welcome. I wouldn't say there's a shortage. There was very negative well, how can I say, the local guys don't really like the expat guys because there's maybe a bit of jealousy there or something, I don't know. But it's got a bit better over the years. Like, I don't really go out that much anymore. When I first started working here, we used to go out a bit. But, the people here are different compared to other parts in Kazakhstan. Apparently here they tend to not be all that friendly, and they can be quite aggressive.
You can
see it on the roads when they drive and stuff like that.
Do they drink petrol and that kind of thing?
No, just vodka. Lots of vodka.
So now, and Doug, are you by yourself there? Are you a single man? What's your story?
No, my wife and daughter are in Australia. We moved to Australia 6 years ago, so I live in Perth at the moment. And my wife and daughter are waiting patiently for me to come home. Unfortunately, COVID's thrown things for a border.
Normally you just spend a few weeks in Kazakhstan.
Normally I do 6 weeks, and then I go home for 6 weeks.
You ever worry that your wife might have like a new man in her life if you're away for that long?
I trust her wholeheartedly.
Okay, well.
And for me as well.
I'm just checking. You know what I'm like. Yeah. I'm skeptical.
I won't say what some of the other engineers that I work with get up to, but leave it at that. I'm a good boy.
What money do you use in Kazakhstan?
The Kazakhstan tenge. It's about 420 tenge to the US dollar at the moment. Don't ask me to do the maths. I won't ask you guys either. I know what you like with maths, sir.
No, terrible.
Can we do the tenge?
You can try. I'm not going to show you how to do it.
Do you think out of Damon and Sia and I, do you think any of the three of us would fit in Kazakhstan? Do any of us look like we could be Kazakh?
No.
No.
Oh.
Are they similar to Mongolian-looking people, Asiatic?
Yeah, they're Asian-y, Mongolian sort of
Asian. Yeah, there you go.
Looking. Not quite
flattish
like,
noses.
Not really. Not quite like the Chinese eyes, but you can definitely see it's a sort of a Asian. Asian. That's probably Mongolian would be the most accurate.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is there a lot of radiation around? I mean, like, do you worry sometimes that you might grow something in the night because, you know, there are lots
of... Why do you think my jacket's so bright?
Yeah, because the old Soviet Union used to dump a whole lot of things.
And my hair's gone as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you got to watch that, dude. If you brought a Geiger counter into Kazakhstan from Australia, they wouldn't allow you back into Oz. So,
Gareth, just speaking before I forget, I wanted to just comment. Yesterday, you were speaking about your average result. To me, your B's and A's and B's and all that is way above average. Like, I think I ended up with a D in matric.
Oh, wow.
And, I ended up doing okay. I might not be the most switched on person in the world, but I don't really believe the whole education system is 100% accurate. Just because you get straight A's doesn't mean to say you're going to, you know, be a success in life. So,
are you earning good money as a helicopter engineer in Kazakhstan?
The money's good, and obviously when you're away from home, you get extra money as well. So, right. I've gotten used to that, and I've gotten used to having only working half a year and going home for half a year and not working. So it's a different kind of lifestyle. As I said earlier on, COVID's thrown a spanner in the works. So we're doing long distance now, and hotel quarantine thanks to the Australian government.
What a lonely, lonely man.
It is a bit of a lonely existence, alone. Fortunately, I'm a type of person where I'm quite happy in my own skin, and I've gotten used to being by myself, so it's not too bad for me, you know. And
I don't like your decor, the decor in your room that you're in. It looks like you're in a container of some kind, or a medical facility. There's not a picture. There's not a painting. There's not even a hey.
Yeah. I'll take you out into the hangar. There you go.
It is a container. Look at that. Oh, there's some
helicopters. Oh, wow. Look at that. Those are helicopters. Okay. Oh, so you're okay.
That's you. The gift of the day. So you actually, I know. Awesome.
Yeah. All right, listen.
This little office of mine is actually right next to the toilet, and when the wind blows like this, it blows the smell from the toilet into the office. So it's like basically
that's
like in a toilet, you know?
No, it's horrible.
Right. Yeah.
Listen, dude, I'm gonna let you.
Anyway, guys,
I'm gonna let you go. Yeah. Good to have you on.
All the best.
Thanks, dude. Thanks very much. It's Duds. That's cool. He's in Kazakhstan. Now, that's an interesting place. Not a place I want to go to. Is it in your top 10 list of places you want to visit?
Jeez, no. Definitely not.
But apparently the economy is pretty good. I read up on Kazakhstan. They're not a hugely wealthy country, but they've done okay. I think they're quite rich in oil.
Okay. Yeah.
And some other minerals. They're doing okay. They're comfortable.
Yeah, not bad.
But imagine minus 38 or minus 25 degrees. Can you imagine?
No, I think it must be horrible. It must be so horrible.
That's right.
Ugh.
Horrible. Horrible.
And of course, you know, the thing, like, you can't think about Kazakhstan anymore without thinking about Borat, right?
Exactly.
Doesn't matter where you, I mean... All I was hearing the whole time he was talking to us was this song playing in the background.
Hey.
Exactly. That's all I could hear.
I haven't watched the new movie. Is it on HBO? What is it on?
I don't know where it is now, but I watched it. It's very funny. Oh my god.
Where did you find?
Means and Ways.
No, I'm trying to think because it was definitely that I watched legitimately, but I can't remember how. Do you know what movie was it that someone was telling me?
Maybe it'll eventually arrive on DSTV catch up or something.
I'll remember. I can't remember now. Anyway, Borat.
Or the Netflix.
So, hey, I mean,
living hope.
You know, it's amazing to me how Americans are all over the world doing all kinds of interesting work. And, you know, this is unfortunately for us, we probably need helicopter engineers here too, but they can go and earn more money in a place like Kazakhstan. And nobody wants to spend half the year in Kazakhstan. Nobody, not even Duds. I mean, he's probably earning
sounds horrible.
He's probably earning
there.
Really good money there, which is why he's doing it, because Kazakhstan is not a fun place to be. But, you know, you weigh it up, you make a decision.
So when he comes home after 6 months, I mean, him and the wife, they must just
big like, time.
Yo, big time, eh? And then maybe after 3 or 4 days they kind of recover and they slow down.
For sure,
I imagine you can't bottle up those missing 6 months all.
No.
You know. He looked a bit frustrated. I'm sure he masturbates a lot.
Ew, Damon.
Probably.
Hey, this is life. This is real
stuff. That's how it goes. That's how it goes, yeah. You can't avoid the obvious. That's how things...
Yes, that's how I have a mass debate about it.
Correct. All right, well, we got Sean Sanders joining us.
You're very considerate there.
Exactly.
Sean Sanders is going to join us in a second or two. He's going to tell us about what's going on in the world of crypto. I see that it is bouncing around the $50,000 mark at the moment. There's a bit of a rebound happening because it did drop quite low yesterday. And you know, a lot of people, there was comment, there was panic. There was a lot going on there. We'll check in with Sean in just a moment or two. And we always have questions for him. And I've got good news for those people who've been asking for Anthea. See, she's in on Wednesday, Friday, right?
Friday.
Yeah,
yes.
Friday, Anthea. Oh. She'll give us a little update based on what Tito's budget speech is. We'll check in with her again, find out how Anthea is.
Is she going to become a regular feature again?
I don't know. I mean, one of the reasons we stopped is because we thought, nah, you know, we'd already done it for like 5 years. But we'll check in with her and we'll get to hear all the latest from her in a moment.
Apparently Borat is on Amazon. I just got a message.
Ah, okay. Very good. All right. Excellent. Damon is not from here, says Naomi. He was sent here, like an alien.
My mother's Naomi. My mother's name is Naomi.
But maybe it's your mother who sent that message.
My mother's got a 300 rand cell phone. She doesn't even know how to send an SMS. God bless her. She can't even send an SMS.
A 300 rand cell phone. How?
Well, she's got one of those like cheap. Like things that you'll buy at Pick and Pay or Woolworths. Like it's a simple. It's like one of the first when we first got cell phones in 1995.
Yeah,
it's like one of those kind of cell phones. You know, it's like something like a homeless person would have.
How does...
That's true. So you should only use this to talk to people. That's it.
How do you... I mean, I've never even seen a 300 Rand phone. That's amazing.
Well, it's one of... But Gary, that's not a smartphone. It's a simple phone that you can only do SMSs and phone calls.
That's phenomenal.
No, it's not phenomenal. It's a cut phone, man.
Damon, I didn't know you got a 300 Rand cell phone. This is how out of touch I am.
Maybe they're more than 300 Rand now, but they cuck, man.
Hmm.
They cuck. I ever tell you that my mother once took her TV remote control into her handbag instead of the phone. And at one time she left the phone in the fridge.
Oh, that's. I do recall the fridge incident. You told us about that, but the remote control instead of the phone.
No, it could give me a heart attack if my mother phones me and says, "Game on! I just bought Bitcoin." I mean, imagine if she said that. That's not going to happen.
Well, it might. I mean, she might be on the money. So let's. On that note, welcome Sean Saunders. How's it, Sean? How you doing, dude?
Hey, Gareth. Hey, team. Yeah, good. Great, actually. Can't complain. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good. Well, another week where there's lots to talk about. So Bitcoin has been a bit of a ride. And what do you ascribe the big drop yesterday to and the recovery today? How do you explain that? Because, again, people get super nervous and they think, oh, the bottom's falling out of this thing, and they sell. And then that obviously drives the selling and the price goes down as a result of panic. What would you say happened?
Well, we saw a big pullback yesterday, right? I mean, Bitcoin went from, $53,000 to $45,000. Mm. I mean, that's a huge drop. It was about a 17% drop, was the worst of yesterday. I mean, Ethereum saw a big pullback. A lot of money moved out of the market, but it's a healthy correction. I mean, when you see the market increase at the pace it has, you have to have these sort of pullbacks, right? And the awesome thing to see is that you're looking at the market now where you've seen a whole bunch of new money enter the space, and it's back above $50,000.
Yeah.
So it is a healthy correction. And I mean, you look at the history of crypto, honestly, this is not a big pullback in the greater scheme of things. In absolute value terms, in terms of the amount of money that was actually traded and, you know, the amount of money moving around the crypto system, that was significant. And it's certainly the biggest pullback in history from that standpoint. But it's healthy. And, you know, this is the sort of thing, or the sort of pullback, where you actually have to say, well, listen, maybe if I've never got exposure to crypto, this is the time I can move in. You could see a further pullback,
okay,
right?
So,
I mean, you're in this weird position now where you're going, okay, do we then move higher? Do we then start moving towards $100,000 of Bitcoin? Or do we actually pull back and maybe get $45,000 again? But will you have the guts to then buy into that market? That's sort of the big question, yeah.
All right, so here's the question. And again, it's always necessary for me to preface this by saying that you are not giving financial advice. We're asking you because we're curious and interested in this. We're looking at it because it's something that you do for a living. It's what your company does. You invite people to invest their money, but it's up to them. What do you think investors should do now that the whole crypto market's rebounding?
I think you need to take, and I've said this on your show, it's boring. I want to give something like, you know, you've got a lot of guys that come on to various podcasts and they say, no, Bitcoin's going to $1 million or $100,000 or whatever the story is. It can also pull back 10%. So don't go and just run out there and put, you know, like your life savings into crypto. Start small. We've said this all along.
And how much has to do with how long you want to be in the market for? Because if you are looking for the quick in and out and you think you can cash in, maybe you invested in January and you made way more money than you thought you would and you cashed out 2 weeks ago, you'd be very happy with yourself now. That doesn't mean you need to go straight back in. But if you want to be in there for a long time and you feel like the value of cryptocurrency is in the long term and that things like Ethereum and many of the other platform currencies that help build the structure that runs behind all of this, the shared ledger idea or the fact that you can build apps on top of it, all the rest of it, that stuff is a much more long-term investment, right? That's not the quick wins.
No, completely. I mean, there's traders in the market. Traders actually make the market more efficient, generally speaking. There's a debate around that. But you need some short-term speculators in the market, just like you need longer-term investors. That's what makes this price discovery of crypto really interesting, and the price discovery of any market. And what I mean by price discovery is, you know, at the end of the day, the value of anything is just a willing buyer and a willing seller. So there are people out there that believe that a single Bitcoin is worth today $50,000. And, you know, in the future, if they believe it's going to be worth more and you've got more people that are adopting digital currency, the price should increase, right? You've got more demand. But I think it's quite interesting to look at wealthy individuals, right? How do a lot of people make a lot of money? And generally speaking, I mean, I have not met a very wealthy individual that has traded successfully throughout their entire life, right? And I come from a trading background. So most of the very wealthy people I know that made very smart long-term investments that have paid off with 100x, 1000x, 2000x returns. And if you view most investments in that sense, right, you're not looking at the 20% or the 50% or even the 100% return. With crypto, should this actually, you know, Bitcoin has the possibility now, and this is what people don't quite understand. Ethereum is a completely different kettle of fish, right? Ethereum can get a lot bigger than Bitcoin, and I know there's an argument around that. But Bitcoin could overtake gold's market capitalization. Currently, it's 8% of gold's total market capitalization. But Bitcoin could overtake gold, and all of a sudden, you're looking at least a 10 to 15x return if that were to happen. And that's really the big opportunity here.
And someone made a good point about the comparison between Bitcoin and gold, and we've discussed this a couple of times on the show, but we've never discussed this aspect of it. While gold is a store of value and all of those things, Bitcoin and particularly some of the other cryptocurrencies that are much more about blockchain and what you can build on blockchain, those things, gold doesn't have a ledger of all the people who've owned that piece of gold since the dawn of time. We don't know how that ownership has changed and what exactly has happened to that gold over time, but we do know every step of what's happened with every piece of cryptocurrency available in the market, right? And that's just it's already something that makes it different. Apart from that, its applications are so much more varied than what you could do with a hunk of gold.
Completely. And I think that's the big use case here. People go, I mean, today we're looking at crypto being like, oh my word, it's 10% the size of gold. Sure. That's a really big deal. That's just Bitcoin, right? Yeah. But I mean, in 15 or 20 years, are you going to have a more digitized world? Yes. You know, if you start mining, and I know we're going to start thinking really out the box here, but if you start mining meteors, and you start extracting gold and resources from that, which maybe seems quite far-fetched now, but in 10 to 15 years' time, is that a possibility? Yeah, then you're kind of screwed, right? There's not going to be more Bitcoin. There's certainly going to be more gold if that is the case.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a case of when that's going to happen, and then you've got that inevitable depreciation of gold.
So a lot of people are worried about tax because, you know, governments all over the world are starting to figure out what's going on with crypto now, and they want a piece of the action. And there's no such thing as a government that's going to turn a blind eye to this. They want their pound of flesh. What happens with tax in the crypto world and crypto tax?
Oh, it's complicated. And that's unfortunately, you know, to most taxes, complicated. But in the crypto space, cryptocurrency is not deemed to be a currency, even though it's cryptocurrency. It's a bit of a misnomer. Mm. It's deemed to be a property of sorts. So it's not a commodity in South Africa. It's deemed to be similar to a property, and not property as in like a real estate investment, but rather just physical property that you've invested in. Mm. So that means only when you incur a gain, so when you sell your Bitcoin or your cryptocurrency investment or one of your bundles with us, would you be liable to pay tax on the gains. Now, there's essentially two types of tax. If you're trading cryptocurrency and you're buying and selling on a regular basis, you'll be liable to pay tax for any gains that you make at your marginal tax rate. So whatever tax rate whichever tax bracket you're in, which can range from 18% all the way through to 45% in South Africa, your gains will be taxed at that tax rate. If you hold an investment for an extended period of time, and there's a good reason that we've built our bundles in the way that we have, it's because from a tax advantageous position, you're sitting there going, well, I'm making an investment into something that's long-term by nature, which means that if you go to SARS and say, I've invested in a crypto bundle with a long-term investment nature, and then you sell your investment out after a year and a half, 2 years, or 3 years, you're only liable to pay tax at the capital gains tax rate, right? Which is substantially lower.
Right.
And I mean, when I say substantially lower, if you're in the top tax bracket from an income bracket standpoint, you're looking at saving about 26% on tax.
Yeah,
that was a substantial amount, right?
That was actually a question we got from Alex last week, and I thought it was a really good one, so that's why we threw that in there. There are a few other questions that we've got. There are still lots of people who are very skeptical. We talked about Elon Musk and putting a lot of Tesla money into Bitcoin, but there are a lot of companies that are coming on board now and making it possible to pay for things with Bitcoin. What is the next big step? I mean, is it the banks? Because we've also hinted at that happening, and it has started happening in certain places. What do you think the next big step would be?
So I think if you look over at Germany, you look over at Switzerland, you look over at Singapore, you'll see what's happening next. And what's happening is that the banks are getting into the action, right? Mm. So the banks are not custodying cryptocurrency. They're utilizing cryptocurrency as just any other assets. You know, if you were investing in property, you could potentially have you know, that real estate ownership custodied by the bank, stock certificates are custodied by professional brokers. You've got exactly the same thing happening in the custody in the crypto space. Sorry. So banks are stepping in. They're essentially trying to challenge, you know, companies such as Revex. They're challenging exchanges that exist out there. They're going to want in on this market, right? I mean, banks are losing money. Interest rates are super low around the world. You know, if you had invested in the banking sector 5 years ago, you'd be sitting in a pretty terrible position right now. So they want a chunk of this change, and they're going to move in, right? And I think that's a good thing for the industry, right? Banks have to evolve.
Yeah. Obviously, one last thing is people are talking about some kind of reset that they do with Bitcoin in April. Is this nonsense? Is this some kind of rumor, or is there something happening?
That's a rumor. As far as I'm aware, I don't know of any reset that'll take place.
Where do you get your info when it comes to the stuff that you tell us? I mean, you must have a huge network of people, so it's not easy for you to just say, oh, well, I just go here. But are there certain places that you visit on a daily basis, certain apps you use to track this stuff?
I subscribe to a few different newsletters. I mean, you really have to stay kind of, you know, up to date with the crypto market on a, you know, kind of like hour by hour basis, really. I mean, remember, I'm still sitting in the office with everyone that's immersed in the world of crypto. Mm. I mean, everyone here is completely obsessed with Bitcoin. Most of them want to receive their salaries in Bitcoin. Mm. You know, you're dealing with people that literally jump onto any new news and want to debate about it and talk about it and all the rest. So you're kind of in it, which is a little bit different to people that are trying to just get, you know, information online. There is an online site, and there's obviously no paid marketing or anything, but there is Decrypt. Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward to spell that. But Decrypt, essentially, you know, I use that for a lot of my news sources. I think they're great. I mean, they do aggregate news stories. Generally speaking, it's really quality content. It's not South African focused. In South Africa, you do have CryptoTrader. .co.za. No, that's Altcoin Trader. I'm actually getting confused. Yeah, there's a South African site, which I'll actually share with you guys after this, and you can post it as maybe part of the comments.
Yeah, of course.
They're fantastic, and I've got to say that even though I'm going blank with the name now, a really good news source as well. I follow them on Twitter.
Well, you see, this is the kind of thing. There's never ever a moment where I have you on and we run out of things to talk to you about, and we've just proven that again with taking it in several different directions. But we're out of time, unfortunately, for today. Find out more by going to revex.com. You can register, you can invest a small amount of money or a large amount of money. It's totally up to you, and you can buy into one of their great portfolios. You can create your own portfolio and buy into various of their offerings. They've got indexed cryptocurrency platforms that you can go and have a look at. You can also buy the the gold coin. There's the US dollar coin. There are a whole lot of ways that you can move your money into different assets so that you have a diversified portfolio, and then you can go along for the ride, see what happens. It's a hell of a thing to do, and it's lots and lots of fun. Sean, good to see you, dude. Thank you.
Good to see you guys too. Damon, by the way, one last point. I think you're talking about your mom buying Bitcoin. I think it's time, right? Could be, you know, what she needs.
My mother's 90 years old. She never even worked out how the video machine worked at home. And if she had to phone me to say, I'm going to buy Bitcoin, I would fall off my chair. One of the nurses at the retirement village has got a gun to her head.
Right.
What?
Revex is super easy, definitely. You let her come to us. We can sign up for an account. It'll be as easy as 1, 2, 3, I promise.
Just quickly.
I would love you to be on the phone with her. You have to scream. She's like, I think she's maybe got 30% hearing. I'd love to see you scream. I was screaming so hard the other day. My wife came to take the phone away from me because it was out of control. She couldn't hear me.
Sean, just quickly, let's do a fun calculation, because I'm sure you've got a way of doing this quickly. If you took the price of a Bitcoin in the beginning of January this year, all right, and let's say you put 10,000 Rand into Bitcoin in January and you cashed out last week, what would have happened to your 10,000 Rand? Purely as an academic.
You would have seen that 10,000 turn into 16,000 Rand, roughly. I mean, yesterday's pullback would have changed things quite substantially. Go back to the start of last year, right? And then you're looking at a good 450% return, right? That 10,000 Rand would be looking closer to like between, you know, 35 to 45,000 Rand. That's the sort of thing you have to look at. You know, go back to the start of crypto, right? If you invested in 10,000 Rand when crypto first started, you'd be sitting with more money than South Africa's GDP. Like, you know, that's the kind of craziness. Remember, and the other things, people don't realize this. This crypto market is at this point in time, is $1.5 trillion, right? It got up to $1.7 trillion. Mm. Go work out it in rands, right? That is colossal. That is, you know, almost 8 or 9 times the size of South Africa's GDP right now. Yeah. Probably more than that, actually, because, you know, South Africa is not exactly growing at a fast pace. That's insane, right? That's how big this digital asset market is. So, you know, everyone that's sitting there going like, oh, this is just pie in the sky stuff. It doesn't make sense. I'm like, well, there's a lot of money in this space, a lot of money at stake. Right?
Well, surely by now you can put a nice picture on your wall then. Surely you can afford it. You also got like an empty room.
So
I'm sitting here in a corner of the room, right, because there's so much echo in our office, funny enough. But hopefully next week we're actually moving to a new office. Yeah. So you'll get a nice swanky Cape Town mountain behind us and not even like, you know, one of those.
Not
like the fake Cape Town that the newsrooms use as their backdrops whenever they interview people. You can have the real view.
No, this will be a real mountain, right?
Damon's very – he is observant. We spoke to a guy in Kazakhstan at 7 o'clock, and he was commenting on how this guy's office looked like shit. So I think he's just said your office is boring.
Good. Well, there's no problem with the office looking a little boring, right? Preserving capital, focusing on what matters. Yeah. Like customer service.
Ah, exactly.
Keeping overheads low.
Yeah. Damon, great, you want to say something?
No, I know. I've got a friend. She watches this Bitcoin thing because she thinks you're good looking. She thinks you eye candy.
We use what we have, right? I mean, I think the filter that I have on my camera right now is phenomenal. Yeah. Like, I can't tell you.
To take Damon seriously.
She says Sean is yummy. Okay. So I said, but you understand Bitcoin. No, I've got Bitcoin. So she enjoys the actual content as well. So you're not just a piece of meat.
All right.
Love it.
All right, everybody. Thanks,
I'm going to leave it there. Have a great rest of the day. Family, get your balance by some Bitcoin, please.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. Guys. Thanks, Sean. Cheers, man. Sean Sanders. Wow. So Damon, well,
But Gareth, can I comment?
You insulted his office, but you made you gave him a compliment about himself. So I think that worked out.
Gareth, it's just so funny. In the last couple of months, people have gone on Twitter and they're criticizing your background and they're saying it's a made up background. And I've resisted the temptation to say no, that's actually Gareth's real background.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, isn't that's for your TV show, right?
Yeah.
Your real background, so right?
The backdrop on the TV show is actually a photograph they asked me to take on my phone.
Exactly.
Of the room. But for the first 3 episodes, I think it was, they didn't turn the picture around. So it looked like the book titles were the wrong way around, like it was fake.
They were inversed.
Yeah.
So all these trolls under the bridge the mud and the stink and the sweat and the blood and the way, they all think that it's made up.
Yes.
You know, there was one person in particular, and I do get worked up, and then I go, it's just not even worth it to engage with people online. But one person in particular who, I didn't even pick this up, but it's a thing on your bookshelf, Gareth. There are a bunch of encyclopedias, but then there's a massive Roald Dahl book.
Yes.
And it's a thick Roald Dahl book.
It's a biography of his. And what did
and so they're saying, that's the only thing that Gareth reads there. Please pretending like he's so smart. And Roald Dahl is just
and
there.
And then the one woman who loves Roald Dahl but hates Gareth, she's all offended, you know, that Roald Dahl is like associated with Gareth in the background.
Oh, my
there
God.
There you go. Ugh.
Listen, you know what? It's amazing to me how much time people have for this kind of sniping. They're obviously...
No, but Gareth, you must embrace it, because the fact that they're talking about you is that's the big positive to take out of it. In fact, the famous cricket commentator Trevor Quirk, when he was arrested numerous times for drunken driving, and people were talking about it, he said Charles Fortune once told him, if they're not talking about you, then you're finished.
Wow.
That's not Charles Fortune said. they're not talking about you. That's going to be a problem. The grass is green, the sky is blue, and Eddie Barlow is running in right arm over to Kevin McKenzie. And it's a 4-6. That was Charles Fortune, man. What a legend.
Sia's been watching this show, and he's been trying to tell me about it for a week and a half now, and we haven't got to it on the show yet. We've got a bit of time now. So it's called I Blew It, and it's a South African TV show, right?
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it?
I think it is so worth anyone's time just to see how weird we are with our relationship with money.
What channel is it, and when is it on?
It plays, well, I caught up with it on Showmax. I know it's on DSTV somewhere. I don't know which particular channel. But the premise of it is each episode, they focus on someone who received a large amount of money and then just blew it in a short span of time.
How do these people get it? Do they win the lotto? Do they get paid out for insurance claims? That kind of thing.
All of those things. Some people have.
It's on Showmax.
Mm-hmm. Some people have won the lotto. Some people have had their parents die, and so there's a great big inheritance. Some people have been in accidents, so then they have a road accident fund payment that they receive. It's also a little sad to pick up just how ill-informed a lot of people are. And when you receive, 1.2 million rands all in one go, you start to go, actually, I can go out and I can pay 6,000 rands in booze, and then I can buy a car now. And there's like this trend of people buying cars and they don't even have driver's licenses, but they're like, yeah, it's the thing. And, within months, they've blown it all. It's fascinating.
It's scary, and it's a powerful thing. If you suddenly get 10 million rand or whatever, it's a real mind.
Well,
it's tough.
There's the old adage of, and it seems to play out more or less every single time, when someone suddenly happens to receive a whole lot of money that they didn't earn by creating value or by building a business or by selling something or by performing a service or whatever it might have been. If you didn't earn that money, it's usually easy come, easy go. That's always what happens. And people who win the lottery seldom hold on to it for more than 2 or 3 years. And then they're back where they started. So that's incredible. It doesn't matter how much they win, hundreds of millions in some cases, and they end up back where they started within a few years. There's also another thing that someone told me the other day. How many of the Fortune 500 companies in the world were started by someone who won the lotto? Zero, right? So those people who, who always argue for a universal basic income or for an increase in the minimum wage, for example, they think that if we just raised, if everyone just had more money, everything would be better. But that has to be an organic process. Your economy has to grow because there is supply and demand, and there are market forces, and there are prices that are allowed to establish themselves. Because if you try to manipulate the system, you don't actually create value. It's fake. It's artificial. And then it eventually collapses. So this is a really good lesson to all those people who are constantly talking about how, well, if the poor just had more money, or if the rich just gave their money to the poor, if we all started on the same level, then we'd end up in a better place. It's not true.
Well,
it's just not true.
Yeah, but Gareth, when they talk about, I hear what you're saying, but when they talk about raising the minimum wage, they don't mean raising it to the levels where those people are suddenly very wealthy. It's just raising from, instead of 8 rand an hour, 15 rand an hour. So the person is still not extremely wealthy, but they're going to just be able to, they're going to be able to put food on their table when maybe they couldn't have done it before.
Yeah, but the thing about the minimum wage that people don't realize is that what you do by creating minimum wage is you actually remove the opportunity for people who would work for money under minimum wage to actually do that work legally. So in other words, if you wanted to hire a bunch of people they're cleaning up the river in front of my house. These are volunteers, so they're not working for money. They're actually doing it. They're doing it all the way along the river. So I'm just one of the places that they're going to be working in front of. Now, if that was someone's business, and let's say each of those people, unqualified labor, most of them are probably unemployed. If you said to them, I'll give you what I can afford. Let's say I've got 5,000 rand, but I'm going to have to split it between the three of you, for example. You can't do that now because that's below the minimum wage. So those people can't work. You can't pay them. The service can't be delivered. And therefore, nobody wins because the government has actually prevented you from doing anything below the minimum wage. So while it's a good idea, it has the opposite effect of the intended effect. It actually creates less employment. And all it does is help those people who are already employed to earn a little bit more, most of which will be taxed probably as they keep moving up the income bracket. But for those people who don't have work, it prejudices them really badly. And in this country, we were, 30 to 40% unemployment, depending on who you speak to. And the statistics came out just this week that our unemployment rate's gone up even more.
But does tax really come into it? Somebody who's earning minimum wage doesn't earn enough to pay tax.
That's another conversation entirely. But when you know, beyond that, it obviously does start. But forget about tax for a second. You do understand what I'm saying about minimum wage and how
yes.
In a country like this, all that the minimum wage is going to do is help people who are already employed and in a very specific earnings bracket. Those people unemployed.
Yeah, but on the other side, of your explanation, and I'm not arguing with you, but in the context of South Africa, you know, there are so many illegal immigrants that people will give employment to. That'll be paying less.
There's this balance.
That's the reality.
There's a balance between exploitation, which nobody wants.
Yes.
And
now I'm not meaning exploitation.
Yeah, but the reality is that you actually can't control that. Governments can't control that stuff because there is someone somewhere who's prepared to do it for less. Then you're going to go with the person who'll do it for less. That's just how the market works. If someone sells batteries at 10 Rand and someone else manages to sell them at 8 Rand, who are you going to buy them from? The 8 Rand guy. That's just how it works. You can't fight that.
Well, there's no amount of, I agree with you 100% in general, but there's other factors that can also come into play. Convenience, etc., access, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So let's change the battery discussion. Let's say there's a guy who sells them for 10 Rand, but there's a guy whose shop is closer and they're 11 Rand. You might want to go to the shop that's closer and pay the extra rand. But again, it's market forces.
No, I hear you, but the other day you said that I'm weird, and maybe I'm just weird. But I often will give somebody business because I like them. They were friendly, they smiled.
Sure.
So it's not always the money.
Okay.
I often will support somebody because, you know, they're just friendly.
Well, Carl says, Gareth, I'm a hard capitalist. I detest socialism. I do, however, believe that in this country, a minimum wage probably is necessary because of our history. Well, yeah, I mean, I will say this, that, you know, people like domestic workers. I was having this conversation with my sister the other day. She was saying that she has a friend who lives in a complex, and some of the people in that complex don't pay as much as the other people.
Uh-huh.
For the same service, and that some of these domestic workers are in tears every day because they get treated really badly, and they don't get paid as much. And then others are happier because they get paid enough and they get treated properly. They get treated respectfully. And I don't think there's anyone who thinks it's acceptable for someone to, first of all, denigrate and make someone's work life a misery. But second of all, anyone who thinks that someone should be paid a pittance for work that other people are being paid something good for.
Yeah. Gareth, maybe, and this is unlike me, maybe I'm being overly objective and devil's advocate, but, you know, you've got to deal with each case by case.
Absolutely.
Individually. Because in the case of your sister's friend, maybe there's some people in the building that are overpaying. Maybe they're ridiculous.
Damon,
they're paying 300 Rand a day instead of 200 Rand a day.
That is the whole point.
I don't know.
That is why it's stupid for government to say, here's the minimum wage. Because they don't know.
It's tricky.
And you know.
Can I say it's a gray area?
It's a gray area.
Oh, of course.
And people say, well, you know, there's exploitation, blah, blah. But no one's forced to work for a specific person or in a specific situation. Many people are working in jobs that they don't like. People who are earning lots of money maybe hate the job that they like, and maybe they don't like their bosses. There's a lot of that going on. You always have, in a free country like South Africa, and despite everything that we always say and we moan and complain about, We are a free country. You always have the option of saying, I don't want to work here anymore. You always have the option of taking your chances in the market and doing something else.
Well, Gareth, you've mentioned this before a year ago or 2 years ago, and I hear what you're saying, but sometimes people can be very desperate, and they may fear that they're not going to find another job. So I hear you're being very theoretical. In reality, it doesn't work that way.
It's still you have the right as a person.
You have the right. You have the right.
You have the right to leave if you're being treated badly.
Yes, but you may be deaf. You may not have a choice. You may feel that you're not going to find another job.
Damon, I'm saying this as someone who's walked out of jobs before. I've done it a couple of times, and it's the best feeling
Gareth,
in the world.
That was at the golf club when the man didn't like his whiskey, and you were 16 years old and you walked out.
Not true. I did it at Prime Media. I did it at SABC, and I've done it with smaller jobs. I've done it where I've been asked to, you know, host a thing or to do a TV show or whatever, and you say no. That's like resigning. You got to choose the people you want to work with and the amount
Gareth,
of money that
I'm
makes
sorry.
It worthwhile.
I don't want to. I hate to have an argument. This is our argument time. One little quick argument, Gareth. I'm sorry, man. You are a highly, highly successful person who comes from a nice, white, privileged background. You can't compare yourself to some, say, very poor, uneducated domestic worker. Come on. It's insane.
If you're a domestic worker and you work for somebody and you are being treated really badly, and there's lots of work in South Africa for domestic workers, especially if you're a good person who can
work. How do you know that?
I'm telling you, Damon, that there is no reason for you to stay there and be abused. It's the same as you don't need to stay in a relationship where you're being abused. I know that it's hard for people to get out, and I'm not criticizing them for staying in, but I'm saying that you always have the option to leave. And some people are the architects of their own misery because they so fear being unemployed or being alone or whatever else it is that they don't take responsibility for their own lives. And this is only one approach. You could sit there and suffer for the rest of your life.
It's much more complicated. I hear what you're saying, but it's much more complicated than that. Oh, argument over.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. We've run out of time for today's argument.
You want an argument? Remember the Monty Python skit? You go for an argument?
Yeah. Well, we've run out of time for the argument and the show. Have a happy Wednesday, everybody. Goodness. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Thanks, Damon. Good to see you. Cheers, see ya.
It was lovely having me.
Cool. Bye, everybody. CliffCentral.com